It is now my privilege to introduce Jason from Visalia with 366 days of continuous sobriety.
Thank you, Jason, alcoholic. So our treasury report reads just like where I was a year ago, completely and absolutely spiritually and emotionally bankrupt. So my story, I started off drinking at a very young age. I kind of had a rough childhood, being brought up not at home, but being bullied. And about 13 years old, I decided to find a bottle. And, you know, that really got me to a point where I didn't give a rat's butt about what happened to me and what people said about me anymore. You know, you could just drink all that away. And, you know, first it started on weekends, and as this year's gone on, you know, the promises have started coming true, and more things are being revealed to me. And just in the last couple of weeks, it's been revealed to me. It's like, you know, God, where I really went over the edge was my junior year of high school, right? Because I've always had this uncanny ability to do anything I want to do, when I want to do it and how I want to do it. I mean, it was just something I was able to do. I'd have a swim meet, I'd go to it, I'd tell my mom that I'm going to swim, whatever. And she said, you've never swam within a second of that. And I'd go out and I'd swim the time that I'd go to. And, you know, I was able to continue that all the way through my junior year. I played through my junior year of football and got to basketball and had a new coach, and the new coach decided that I was too short to play forward, and I had to play guard. Well, my left hand, you know, may as well not be attached to my body, all right, because I can't dribble with it. And I could dribble with my right hand, but that was usually just off my foot. So, you know, I decided that, you know, drinking was a lot more fun than basketball. The coach was a dick, and therefore I wasn't going to play. And there was my very first attempt at quitting. And this all came to me like in the last couple of weeks, where God has allowed me to see some of this, you know. And then I went along and, you know, I continued to drinking more often. I found some friends that their parents let them drink. So they must be really good friends. The parents are going to let them drink, because then, you know, I can go to their house and drink. I don't just have to go out the corner, and I can, you know, get beer out of the refrigerator when I want it. I can do what I want, when I want, how I want. So, you know, they became really, really, really good friends of mine. And we got through my favorite sport, which is football. You know, I decided I wasn't playing basketball. And so I came in that year of my junior year to swim also, and guess what? They're going to make me swim butterfly. Well, I don't like butterfly. It's hard. I mean, you know what's easier than butterfly? Drinking beer. So I quit. And, you know, I look back on this and you know, my family didn't allow you to quit anything. But I realized that, you know, my family was letting me quit these things. And, you know, I grew up in an alcoholic home on both sides of the family. My grandparents on both sides of the family were both alcoholics. So, I mean, you know, I've got this gene just deep down inside me. I mean, it's at least three generations in, you know. I tell my kids, don't drink. I mean, if you ever do, you know, there's a seat waiting here for you, because, you know, you probably got a 60-65% chance of being a drunk like me, because you got my genes, unfortunately, for you. So, you know, I continued to drink through college. I managed to get myself through college, you know, good grades. I did all that. You know, we had an on-campus bar. That was nice. And I made friends with the bartender that was there. It was a nice young lady that was there. And I'd always ask for a half a pitcher of beer when the bar opened at 11 o'clock in the morning. And she always would put, oh, I don't have the half pitcher. So she put a pitcher there. And then I talked to her long enough till it filled all the way up. So, You know, by my noon class, I had a pitcher of beer in me. So then I had, you know, an hour in between classes, and then, you know, I had to go see the same bartender. Sometimes I got the half pitcher, sometimes I got the full pitcher, but I mean, that kind of seemed to be a daily occurrence, right? So, but I managed to get my way through school, got out, did what I was supposed to do. I went out and found a job, and I started working many hours a day, 12 hours a day, 6 days a week. Got myself into the field of business that I thought I wanted to be in, which was the produce business. And, you know, they like to drink a lot in the produce business. That was a perfect business for me. You know, these guys like to drink, so I like to drink. Hey, right on, man. So, you know, it took me about a year and a half to get myself from the cold storage to the sales desk. And, you know, I continued to drink, and now I was making money, so now I could buy booze every day. So thank God at that time I didn't drink hard liquor, I drank beer. Because if I drank hard liquor, you guys wouldn't be looking at me today, because there's no question in my mind that I'd be dead. Because I drank 12 to 18 beers a day, whatever it took to make me go to sleep at night, you know? So that was just normal, everyday Jason. That's what I did. You know, about that point, I had cut off really myself from all people. So I didn't drink at the bars, I drank at home. I mean, I'd occasionally go out to the bar with somebody, but, you know, really it was just drinking at home. So it was me and the TV and a bottle of beer, and, you know, I really started to find that beer really kind of sucked, because I drank, you know, my stomach would kind of get full, so I found some beers that had more alcohol in them. You know, Keystone Ice, it had double the alcohol in it, it was great. So, you know, I didn't have to drink like 18 of them anymore, I only had to drink like 12 of them. But then, of course, you know, not very long thereafter, I was drinking 18 of those a day. So, you know, it continued on like that. I got my first DUI and only DUI in 1999. I was pulled over coming out of the old El Presidente right down the street down there. And, you know, it was when they were doing the construction, building the theater right there, and the stop sign was, you know, obscured by construction equipment. And I'm sure it had nothing to do with the .24 that I blew when I was pulled over. It was obstructed. And I kind of went by it like 2 days later, right? And as I go by this thing 2 days later, I'm like, I ran the stop sign and I was completely sober. And I'm like, well, shit, man, that thing wasn't my fault. They hadn't had to do that construction. There's no way I'd have made out. I'd have been home that day. But that's the way I thought, right? So anyway, this happened right as the time that I was supposed to go sell grapes down in the desert for 2 months. And so it was kind of desperate. I was up against the wall. So I had to go tell my boss what happened, because I was going to have to take a week's vacation and maybe two and go see Uncle Bob or the downtown facility. So I went into court. And I stood up. My now wife was a defense attorney. She remembers me, because, you know, I stood up and the whole lineup was stood up, and the judge asked, you know, what you want to, you know, how do you plead? And everybody was saying, you know, I want a lawyer. I'm not guilty. I want a lawyer. And I just, you know, I'm in the middle of this thing. I've got to get to work or I'm going to get fired. And I don't want to get fired. So I just look at the judge and says, I'm guilty. And I'm remanding myself into custody today. And the judge looks at me and he says, are you sure you want to do that? You know, there's some special circumstances with high blood alcohol level as you have. I said, yep, I've got to be to work in, you know, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, whatever it was. I said, whatever it is. So they threw me in jail. And, you know, later I found out with a roommate of mine who was also an alcoholic who died of this disease. Had I not remanded myself into custody and I had just gone to see Uncle Bob, they probably would have kicked me free the same day. But instead, they took me in the downtown facility, and I got to spend a few days in the downtown facility. So I get in to the holding tank, and, you know, of course, I dress nice. You know, I'm going in front of a judge. Used to wear contact lenses. I knew I wouldn't be able to wear those, so I have my glasses on. And I've got all these really big, mean-looking guys in there, and they're all looking at me, and they're calling me Lawyer Boy. Hey, Lawyer Boy, what did you do? And it's like, yeah, you know, I got DUI. So anyway, I end up getting thrown into the wrong place. They put me in segregated population instead of general population. And there I sat for Tuesday through Friday. And Friday a deputy came to me and, you know, asked me where my wristband was. And I told him I had never received one, and he got pissed off and said a few nasty things to me. And he says, "What's your name?" I told him. And he came back and he said, "You're in the wrong spot. You shouldn't be here." And, you know, I was in a cell with a man who had been spent his whole life in San Quentin. And the guy next to us had spent most of his life in San Quentin. And the only time that I got out of my cell, those two were going to fight up on the upper deck. And it was like, you know, I was just terrified that I was going to be in the middle of it. So, you know, you'd think that would, like, help stop somebody from drinking. But, you know, I got the disease of alcoholism, and it had no chance of stopping me. I got out of there. They kicked me free because they realized I was in the wrong spot. At 12 o'clock, I had nobody to call. I had no friends. So I took my shoes that I had. I ran across town, which was literally 3 miles. And at that time, I was not a runner. But I ran across town for a reason, because they let me out at like 5 till 1, and I knew if I could just get home by 2 o'clock, I could get to the store with a 12 pack of beer. And I made it by 5 minutes. And of course, you know, I drank that beer, and, you know, then I drove on a suspended. I did the classes. I had to transfer them down to the south where I was, and, you know, I did my mandatory AA meetings, and, you know, that was my first exposure to AA, and I didn't want anything you guys had, that was for sure. I just wanted to get the hell out of the classes so I could, you know, get back to my life. You know, I never went and did the right thing, and I drove on a suspended license for 6 months, I guess it was, until, you know, I finished all my program. But, you know, it wasn't the booze that was going to get me, right, if I was driving. It was going to be like a taillight or a blinker or a headlight. So once a week, I check my blinkers, I check my headlights, I check everything on my truck so I can drink and drive. And, you know, that makes zero sense, right? But that was my mindset, you know. They never caught me for drinking and driving, but only once. So, you know, how they're going to get me is that. I was even stupid enough to go down to the courthouse, drive myself, and pay my fine. You know, not even thinking that some police officer is going to come out and, you know, arrest me. Luckily, that never happened. It was about a year later. I went down to that same place to go sell some grapes. And, you know, I came back, and I came back selling grapes, and I wanted to do something a little different with my life. My dad had terminal cancer. You know, I knew I was doing nothing but drink. I wanted to try to do something positive with my life. I wanted to try to find some friends. So I joined a thing called Team and Training. That's a marathon training group, and that is where I met my wife. And, you know, I continued to drink through that whole thing. And finally, at one point, right before I was having to go down the next year to sell grapes again, She was really a stick in the mud. Sorry, Your Honor, you were. You were just a stick in the mud. You didn't want me to drink. So the best thing that had ever happened to me, the nicest person that had ever been to me, I went over to her apartment and told her that, you know what, I don't want to see you anymore because, I just don't. The reason was I didn't want to because I wanted to drink. And for some reason, she decided to come by my house again, which is crazy, I wouldn't answer the door to her because I was a chicken shit. And I stewed on that for about a week, and I realized that, the best thing that had ever happened to me in my life, I was letting walk out the door for a beer. That's the truth of the matter. I realized that was what was going on. So that's when I came into the program for the first time. I guess that was about 19 years ago. I stayed sober for about a year and a half. I had a sponsor. I worked the steps. I did everything I was supposed to do. My sponsor died. I didn't get us another sponsor. I quit going to meetings. And I guess you guys can guess probably where that led me. Back out to drinking. And I've been in and out several times. I get a sponsor, and I don't work all the steps because, I really don't want to do all that work. It's hard to look at yourself, right? I mean, I don't want to look at myself in a mirror every day, let alone, write all this stuff down and then go tell somebody about it. And besides, I've already done that once. I mean, why should I go do it again? This is a bunch of shit. Not going to do it. And, there's been a couple times where my wife found out that I was drinking, and it's like, you can drink it again, I'd go back. The one thing she never did is she never held me accountable. And, I'd clean up for a little bit, and I wouldn't like the sponsor I had, whether it wasn't a fit or whatever, but instead of going to find a sponsor that was a fit, I would just stop going to meetings and start drinking. So a year ago today, this man right there saved my life in the redhead. He came over to my house. I had gone to a meeting the day before. My wife had caught me drinking. It was on a Sunday. I had come back from a place I have in the mountains. And this time she held me accountable. And she told my kids. And I had to see the heartbreak on their faces. And I realized that I was just about to lose everything that I loved. And, that was bottom because I loved my kids more than I love anything in the world. I thought I was a good dad, and as I've gone through some steps, I found out that I was a real prick. And everybody was really happy when I went on a trip. And luckily, I traveled 30% of the time, and they were real happy when I was gone. And I thought I was Father of the Year. But I was just, that guy that they wish would divorce their mom so they didn't have to listen to the bullshit anymore. My wife and I didn't really have any relationship at all. She would spend her nights at one side of the house doing work. I would spend mine at the other side of the house watching TV. The last year of my drinking was complete insanity. I would buy, and no matter how much I promised myself I wouldn't, I couldn't stop it. I would drop my kids off at school in the morning. I'd buy a half a pint of vodka. I would drink it by 8 o'clock in the morning, and then I'd start drinking big tumblers of water because if I drank enough of those, by the time they got home, I would metabolize 8 ounces of booze, and I wouldn't get caught. And I did that day in, day out for a year. And still managed to hold a job. How I did, I don't know. Other than the fact that I worked from home and a gift from God that I was able to do that. And when I became held accountable from my wife to my kids, I actually got serious. I went to a noon meeting. It was on a Monday, and at the Alano Club. And you know, I've been to a lot of meetings at the Alano Club, and you know, there's a lot of time, not a lot of sobriety in that room. And the day that I happened to go on that front row, there was probably close to 100 years of sobriety sitting right there, and they'd all decided to come in the last half hour before the meeting. And my kids came, and I had to talk at that meeting, and I was crying. And after that meeting, I asked Ed to be my sponsor. He agreed, and came over to my house the next day, and you know, basically said, "Look, you know, if you want to do this, and you want to do this the correct way, I'm willing to work with you. If you're not, you know, I'll just paraphrase, you know, don't waste my time." And I was desperate, and I started working the steps, and I started working the steps right away with him. And you know, I did them to the best of my ability. I worked through them kind of at the speed of what they talk about in the big book. You know, where Bill and Bob worked, you know, they worked them in, you know, a matter of weeks and whatnot sometimes at that point. But in 9 months, I had my steps done. With Ed, you know, I've had a few run-ins with my sponsor. You know, he seemed to think I wasn't going to enough meetings, and I told him that I was listening to speaker tapes, and he told me that I needed to go to more meetings, and I told him I was traveling and I was going to listen to speaker tapes. And you know, we haven't had a lot of fights, but that was, you know, finally I came back and said, okay, you know, you're right, I need to be going to more meetings. So I, you know, was able to admit that I was partially wrong. Actually, I admitted I was completely wrong to him. So after during this entire time, you know, my wife and I hadn't had a relationship in years, and you know, Ed sat down at the beginning of this and he says, "Okay, I want you to name 5 things about your wife that you just love." And I think I came up with 3. It might have been 2. And he said, "I can come up with 5 like that, so we'll talk tomorrow. You need to come up with 5. And, you know, my mind was closed. Completely off still. And, you know, obviously I wasn't very far along with the steps when this happened, right? But the one thing that Ed did with me was he took me through the steps, and I assume it was the way he was taken through the steps. But we would walk the track while his kids would do a swim meet, and we'd talk about it. And the first step, you know, I came to realize that, you know, there's 2 parts to that step, right? Admitting that you're powerless over alcohol and that your life has become unmanageable. And I don't think I had ever gone to the point where I realized that my life was unmanageable. Even though I was drinking half a pint of freaking vodka in the morning, every morning, and still working and making deals with people every day. You know, I'm a buyer. I mean, I'm making illegal contracts because I'm under the influence. You know, none of them, if anybody knew what I was doing, none of those contracts would have been binding. So, I had to answer why my life was unmanageable, and that was one of them. And it's like, you know, I realized that, shoot, just because you still have a family and a house and a car, that doesn't mean your life is manageable, right? And so, you know, the other thing that happened to me during this process was, you know, you read something different in the big book where it says, you know, we're not opposed to religious affiliations, and we actually kind of encourage them. Well, kind of reminds me of the thing you hear out there on the internet, right? With school shootings, they say, you know, God, why didn't you stop this? And God says, well, because I'm not allowed in your schools. And, you know, part of the reason I was doing what I was doing because God was not allowed in my life. And so, you know, I allowed God in my life. I started actually going to a church. It's part of my story. I mean, you don't have to do that, but it was for me. And slowly but surely, you know, things started to get better. And, you know, I wasn't quite the asshole that I was all the time. And my attitude got better. And, you know, I got myself through my 4-step. I got on with the 5th step, and I can remember my sponsor taking me out. Right before we go out, he looks at me and says, all right, is everything on here? He says, if not, just go to the bar and go get drunk, because don't go waste my time. And it was all on there to the best of my ability, and we went through that. And then, you know, what I'd never done before when I had done a 4-step was, you know, I never included myself on that step. You know, and I had a lot of resentments against me. I think it was a total of 4 pages of resentments against myself, you know. Some of which I already told you about, you know, being a quitter, which my family just did not do. So I got through the steps, and, you know, lo and behold, my kids started wanting me around. My wife and I started to have conversations. As a family, we started talking and started to repair things. You know, that's a miracle right there. It's an absolute miracle. And 6 months into this whole thing, you know, I'm going I'm going 100 miles, and I'll take a step back. You know, during the week after I got sober, and I managed to stay sober through it, my father-in-law passed away. And I was close to him, and, you know, it was a tough deal. And I was there to support my wife for that. And, you know, that was a help in healing our relationship, so, because I was actually there for her. For the first time in many, many years. And we went through that, and then I finished up the steps, and everything was going 100 miles an hour. We were trying to fix things that were wrong down at her mom's house. I was trying to get through the steps. You know, I travel a lot. I was taking days off of travel, so, you know, it used to be I wanted to extend my travel so I could drink more. But now I'm taking time off my trips because I want to be home with my family. Right? And so that takes us all the way into December, and then my mom gets really sick, where we all think she's going to die. And I'm the only one who's local, so I, you know, had to deal with that situation. You know, she was in the hospital for 2 weeks. She was in a rehab hospital for 3 weeks. She had starved herself to death almost. We got her into a place. I moved her into that place. You know, I kept going to meetings. I kept talking to my sponsor. And I came out the other end of that sober still. And, you know, the one person that I told my sponsor I would never make an amends to was my mother. There was no way I was ever making an amends to her. And, you know, today I'm her primary caregiver, I guess you'd say. I mean, she has people taking care of her at the place she's at, but, you know, I'm kind of her primary caregiver. I moved her into her place. I got everything out of her place. I found a place that would take her, not only take her, but also take her dog that she loves more than anything in the world. It was important that she get that. You know, we looked over all of her financial papers that were all screwed up, and, you know, I was working 20 hours a week from the office and 20 hours a week trying to get her settled and still doing my job while I could on the phone. And luckily I had a boss that was very understanding and allowed me to do that. And I was able to get my mom into a place that has dignity. You know, she's got a one-bedroom apartment with a living room and her dog and a little terrace that she can take her dog out on. You know, and a year ago, before that, I would have probably would have said F for letter and for herself. And that's, you know, the sad, hard truth. That's the sad, hard truth of how hard of a person that I have become. And God saw it fit for me to not only make an amends to my living, an amends to my mom, but get her in the best place that she could be in. And, you know, I looked at her finances and she looked at the place and she told me how she could not afford it. And I'm kind of a math nerd for, I know you guys don't know that, but I'm a math nerd. So I looked at her and I said, Mom, you can live here for 16.4 years based on the money that you currently have. And she looked at me and said, well, I'm not going to live that long. And I said, then don't worry about the money. You know? And then we got the power of attorney. We got all that stuff. So I have all that. And that all ended, I guess, end of February, 1st of March, and, you know, it was the first time I had any downtime at all, I guess you would say, since I started the program, and I kind of fell into a deep depression. I didn't know what to do with myself. I was back on the couch again. I really wasn't doing anything. You know, I've also been seeing a psychologist for the last year because his degree's not big enough and his couch isn't long enough for all the problems that I have. Although he does a fabulous job and does really, you know, has helped me stay sober and you know, God bless you and thank you Ed for that. But I just fell into this deep depression and I didn't know what to do, and you know, I had, when I first started getting sober, you know, through my fourth step, I decided, you know, things I wanted to do. And, you know, I'm 7 months, 8 months into this deal now, and I'm looking at my list of stuff that I want to do, and I haven't really done any of it. I'm like, shit, man, here I go again. I mean, because I love to start a project and then just never finish it, right? And I'm looking at my projects, and it's like, none of them are finished. And, you know, my mind wasn't clear enough to think that, Jesus Christ, you're working 90 hours a week. How the hell are you going to get the list done, right? That never occurred to me. So, you know, I was really in a funk. And what pulled me out of it was my wife came home and said, hey, there's a elected position open. I'm going to run for it. And I'm like, all right, let's go for it. This is your lifelong dream. And so then I went back to working 90 hours a week again. Keep working the program. And, you know, the best part about that is I became her campaign manager. God smiled on us for this, as I had some things that, some money that was due to me for my company that paid for what we needed at the exact times we needed it. I mean, it was almost like this was meant to be. But the way it happened, the guy retired and it was like Instead of starting a campaign off in January, we got to start one off in April. So we had from April until yesterday to do this. And, you know, I didn't know anything about campaigning whatsoever. And neither did she. And what would have happened a year ago is I would have said, well, where the fuck are you going to get the money for that? And instead, I said, great, my options are due. Let's cash those out and let's go all in. This is your lifelong dream. Let's go follow it. And by this time, you know, we're talking. We're no longer at separate ends of the house. My children and I are having a relationship. They're wanting me around. You know, the promises are coming true at this point. And we started to go through this process of this elected to office. And, you know, we reverted back to the people we were while I was drinking and she was back in the office. And it took a 15-year-old blonde over there to get us straight. Because she looked at us and said, you know what? Why don't you just go fucking drink if you're going to act like this? Because that's what you're acting like anyway. And it's like, So all of a sudden, you know, we had to realize that, you know, that she was right. And you know, we were acting like children, both of us. And so we sat down, we apologized, and we made a dinner, and we said that we would try to do better. And, you know, I'm not saying everything was perfect since that date, but you know what? My wife and I learned to work together for the first time during this whole thing. We sat down and ran a campaign of 2.2 people. Because I had somebody over here that I suckered into helping me over a few weekends, you know, going door to door, delivering signs to help out, and you know, we would talk about what needed to be done. We didn't know what needed to be done, but you know, these things, God just kept handing us the answers to things. Whether it be through her boss's campaign manager or whatever, that we just, these things just aren't being handed to us. And that what was really being handed to us is that she and I were able to talk and work through our problems and do what we needed to do. And I'm very proud of what we did. And, you know, now I can honestly tell you that my wife is my best friend. I love my kids more than anything in the entire world. My birthday yesterday, my daughter made me a little bracelet. It's green, it's white, and it's blue. And the green is for growth. The blue is for the serenity, and the white is for the rebirth. And she wrote me a beautiful card to go along with that, and gave me a hug and made me cry yesterday. And you know, I'm happy the way things have gone over the last year. So now my campaign managing days are over, and so now I'm going from 90 hours a week back down to 40, so we'll see how all that works. Ed may get a lot more phone calls. But, you know, that there's definitely a different dynamic in our household now than there was a year ago. People want me around instead of wanting me to go on to trips. You know, my wife and I made best friends out of each other. We don't make a move without each other. We didn't do anything in the campaign without each other. We ran her campaign like an AA program should be ran. We didn't say a negative thing about our opponent in any way, shape, or form. And, you know, she was fortunate enough to win women get her dream job. And I owe that all to Alcoholics Anonymous and that man in red sitting down there for helping me and help keeping me sober. And I'm just very glad that I'm at where I'm at today instead of where I was a year ago, because it wasn't a pretty place. So I don't know where you guys are, but you can sit there and look at that book all you want, and it's not going to help you. If you find a sponsor and you start working those steps, you can work them quickly or you can work them slowly, but these things can all come true for you. And I'd recommend getting into the book, start doing the work, and start figuring things out, because, as is said in here, our best thinking got us here. And I'm glad my best thinking now, gets me a nice warm spot in bed and kids and family that love me. So I've taken up all my time, and I kind of rambled on a little bit, but, like I said, if you're new here, everybody that stood up and raised their hand, including myself, that is willing to sponsor, get yourself a sponsor, get yourself a big book, start working through it, because it can save your life. Thank you.